Welcome to SILRAP Podcasts. You are about to listen to a service of the Center for International Law Research and Policy.
So I want to thank Morten Bergsmo for the generous invitation to come and to the SILRAP team for organizing this conference, bringing us together here in India. So we're jumping to early modernity now, and I want to talk to Ugo Grocius, and I don't think Ugo Grocius needs an introduction. I'm going to assume that he doesn't, and I'll just jump right in. So I want to talk about his ideas on war and punishment, and specifically I want to talk about his neglected concept of solemn war, and I'll say what that is in a minute. And that he discussed mostly in the third and last book of his magnum opus, The Rights of War and Peace. And I think this is interesting because Grotius has usually been read as a theorist of just war. And there are, of course, good reasons for that. But I think the concept of solemn war has been historically at least equally, if not more, influential than the concept of just war, even though the doctrine of solemn war is in many ways inconsistent with the doctrine of just war, as we will see. So I want to start by discussing these contrasting concepts, just war and solemn war. And I want to discuss specifically the role of punishment in each of these. And secondly, I want to give you a sense of why Grotius introduced this idea of a solemn war. And finally, I want to conclude with some brief remarks on the extent to which these reasons that Grotius gave may be applicable or relevant today. So like his distinguished predecessors, the Spanish scholastic that we heard about before the break for lunch, Grotius argued that a war could be justified only as a proportional response to a serious violation of right. So only injuries imminent or received, he said, can justify a war. And that's sort of the basic principle of a just war theorist. He thought of just wars as forms of legal enforcement, judicial remedy also. And he aimed to produce a complete catalog of the injuries that would warrant recourse to force. Punishment had a distinct role to play in this understanding of a just war. In just wars, culpable aggressors and their accomplices deserve to be punished, they should be punished, and the normative architecture of a just war, which Grotius construed in detail, had plenty of room for that kind of punishment. Indeed, just wars presuppose an asymmetrical relationship between the two warring parties. Before the casus belli, that's the injury that justified the war, the aggression, the parties were equals before the law of nature and nations. But after the aggression, and because of the aggression, the victim of aggression came to have jurisdiction over the aggressor. The victim of aggression was the judge and prosecutor of the aggressor. So the war justifying injury placed the warring parties in an unequal position. One side is on the right, the other side is on the wrong. In virtue of the injury, as I say, the victim becomes judge and prosecutor of the aggressor. But even more strongly than that, Grotius' expansive views on punishment in effect made aggressors enemies of mankind. He argued that, quote, anyone who is not subject to the vices of the same kind as the aggressor could have the authority to punish. So basically, he defended universal jurisdiction against aggressors, criminal jurisdiction. And this universal form of criminal jurisdiction was grounded on Grotius' understanding of punishment in the context of just war as not simply a matter of just deserts, certainly not a privilege of revenge in the victim, in part of the victim of aggression, but rather as what we can call a global public good. So chapter 20 of book 2 of The Rights of War and Peace, and this is the long chapter on punishment that he wrote, Grotius justified punishment from the perspectives of the wrongdoer, the victim, and the community of mankind. He argued that punishment could serve to correct and rehabilitate aggressors, more or less along the lines of Plato, according to Emiliano's reconstruction, and as such it was inflicted for the good of the aggressor. He also argued that punishment could protect the victim from renewed attacks by incapacitating the aggressor, and that it could serve to protect all potential victims of that aggressor. So it had this protective function. And in addition to that, it was a universal deterrent. It was exemplary, he said, public and conspicuous, and for that reason it could deter all potential aggressors. So this normative understanding of war and punishment relied on a very strong analogy with the domestic order. Since in international society there was no supranational authority that could have exclusive criminal jurisdiction, what Grotius defended was public authorities having this power of universal jurisdiction to judge the wrongfulness of aggressors' actions. So universal criminal jurisdiction was in effect a substitute for straight criminal jurisdiction, for grotius. But both within the state and outside the state, in international society, punishment had the same fundamental goal, that is deterrence and law enforcement. So Solemn War now. So in book three of The Rights of War and Peace, and that's the last book, the shortest book of the book, these expansive views of the domestic analogy, this very muscular understanding of the role of punishment in international society were essentially taken back. A very different picture of war and punishment emerges in that book, which raises some questions as to the extent to which Grotius was really a just war theorist and an advocate of universal criminal jurisdiction. I think there are reasons to doubt that. So it was in this book three that Grotius introduced the concept of a solemn war, or developed the concept, as an alternative to a just war. And the conceptual apparatus that he produced around the concept was later picked up and elaborated by Pufendorf, Wolff, Vattel. So the canonical figures of public international law in Europe took that concept of solemn war and produced sort of the framework on the basis of which the codification of the laws of war happened in the late 19th century. Or I would argue that. But for this conference, the most important point is that in solemn war, punishment has a very limited role to play. In the introduction to The Rights of War and Peace, the famous prolegomena to the book, Grotius described book three, which is on solemn wars basically, as a book, quote, on what is done with impunity. And solemn wars are indeed constituted largely by impunities, that is, exemption from in principle deserved punishment. People that should be deserved, be punished, Grotius is going to argue they should not really be punished. So if a defining aspect of a just war is that culpable aggressors and their accomplices must be punished, a defining element of a solemn war is that state fighters must be immune to punishment. And we will see in a minute why. But so what are these solemn wars? So essentially they are international wars. They are wars fought by sovereign states against sovereign states. They are regulated by the law of nations, not the law of natures, as just wars are. And they were in fundamental ways inconsistent with just wars. So regarding the use ad bellum, the resort to force, states were assumed to have equally plausible reasons to go to war. They appear as equals before the law, as formal enemies rather than as aggressor and victim of aggressor. They're equals. So from the principle of sovereign equality, basically Grotius derived the principle of belligerent equality. The core use ad bellum obligation in solemn wars is states must publicly declare their wars. And in public declarations of war, they must give the reasons why they're waging war. Grotius said that giving reasons in public declaration showed that it was indeed a sovereign that was going to wage war, and also sought to persuade the whole human race, he said, of the justice of the war. But while public declarations must contain the reasons why war was waged, and presumably Grotius expected sovereigns to follow the canon of jus ad bellum that he had produced in book two of The Rights of War and Peace, both sides in a solemn war could present plausible reasons. So essentially, the law of nations allowed sovereigns to make contradictory claims. It was capable enough to contain contradictory claims in itself. So this means that a war could be unjust, in fact, and yet be solemn. The aggressor state, that was in fact an aggressor, could present spurious reasons in bad faith, and yet if they were presentable reasons, valid reasons apparently, he would be treated as if he was justified in waging war. So regarding the jus in bello, both sides in war have the same privileges and obligations in the course of a solemn war, very much as international humanitarian law operates today. International humanitarian law is decoupled from the jus ad bellum today. There is no linkage between aggression and the privileges of belligerence in humanitarian law. And regarding the jus post bellum, the end of a solemn war was established on the basis of a formal peace treaty. So in a just war, the end of a just war, the jus post bellum for a just war, should be vindication of the violation of right that justified the war. But peace treaties, Grotius argued, could have no necessary connection with the jus ad bellum or in bello. And Grotius emphasized that in peace treaties, the parties should be completely autonomous to negotiate the terms of future peace. It was a political event, a peace treaty, the signing, negotiating of a peace treaty. So if just war should end with the vindication of a casus belli, solemn war must end with a formal peace treaty. So what motivated this seeming change of mind in Grotius at the end of the book? Here's a key passage that I want to read carefully. This is Grotius' defense of the principle of belligerence equality, which I think gives us a good sense of the reasons why he shifted to the solemn war language at the end of the book, and for sovereigns. There is in particular this exhortation to third parties to abstain from punishing aggressors. So why should aggressors be left off the hook like that? Here's the quote, so I'm going to read this quote. "To undertake to decide the justice of a war between two peoples had been dangerous for other peoples who were on this account involved in a foreign war. Furthermore, even in a just war, from external indications, it can hardly be adequately known what is the just limit of self-defense, of recovering what is one's own, or of inflicting punishment. In consequence, it has seemed altogether preferable to leave decisions in regard to such matters to the scruples of the belligerents rather than to have recourse to the judgment of others." So there are two strands of argument that I want to emphasize or underline in this far-reaching passage. One has to do with the adjudication of a casus belli, and the other has to do with prudence, which for Grotius was the canonical virtue of rulers, sovereigns. The undertaking to which Grotius is referring here, this is the just limit of self-defense, of recovering what is one's own, or of inflicting punishment, these are of the essence of a just war. That's what just wars are about. So Grotius is saying here, and he says the same elsewhere in the Rights of War and Peace, that for any given war, it would be very hard to establish the ad bellum justice accurately. Not only may external indications be insufficient for that, but the law of nature is inherently intricate. He compares the law of nature to mathematics at some point, the Rights of War and Peace. Axioms are very easy, but theorems may be very hard to prove and understand. And he also says that the decisions of statesmen are typically contested and subject to reasonable disagreement. So the world of the jus ad bellum is contested, difficult to establish, very hard to adjudicate. It is consequently too much to ask, he's saying, for third parties to adjudicate a foreign war. Adjudication is too demanding epistemically. But it is also too much to ask because doing so, adjudicating a foreign war, taking sides, would cause wars to spread and endanger third parties. So even if third parties could accurately adjudicate a given war, they should be allowed to declare the neutrality if it is in their interest to do so. And by the way, Grotius is the first to defend, rights of neutrality in the law of nations. So third parties cannot be asked to take the risk of crossing a mighty aggressor because, and this is I think the key point, the main point of the talk is that for Grotius, the defining vocation of a sovereign is to protect the lives and well-being of their own subjects, not of humanity at large. So I think this is the difference that sovereignty makes for Grotius. By contrast, the just war framework essentially requires third parties to take sides in armed conflicts. They have to take the side of justice. They have to undertake whatever sacrifices it takes within reasonable boundaries to enforce international justice. So I think implicit in this way of reasoning, there is a fundamental trade-off between different values. The pursuit of justice, in particular of criminal justice, punishment, could escalate violence and spread war. Conversely, the cost of containing war, of preserving the freedom of states, and of preserving the freedom of states to decide whether or not to get involved in a war, is to let injustices pass, even to let powerful aggressors get away with their crimes. So there are other trade-offs, similar trade-offs that one can detect in Grotius' discussion of peace treaties and of the right of conquest that he defended. So for the sake of peace and the rule of international law, sheer power must be allowed to dissolve and reconstitute rights. Might may create right, essentially. He defended that maxim. So ideally, a contract signed under coercion should be null and void, but Grotius argued not so in the case of a peace treaty. Why? Because if there was a duress exemption for peace treaties, the very institution of peace treaties would collapse. Because instead of negotiating the end of a war, the stronger power would continue fighting until crushing the enemy, until unconditional surrender, if he knew that later on the weaker party would renege on the terms of the peace treaty. This is the logic that Grotius used. In the case of conquest, he argued, aggressive occupiers should ideally be expelled by coalitions of law-enforcing states. So occupiers should not be allowed to conquer. Instead of giving the recognition of the territorial acquisition, they should be fought. But in international society, if no coalitions were forthcoming, then recognition is the only way to get on with our lives and to reinstate the rule of international law. So that's the kind of pragmatism that Grotius was defending. Now, it is clear that Grotius agonized over these fundamental dilemmas and trade-offs, but I would argue that the concept of a solemn war was his somehow ambivalent solution. In international society, he argued, peace and the autonomy of sovereign judgment should be allowed to prevail over justice, in particular criminal justice. In international affairs, impunity may be the cost of peace and respect for sovereign judgment. So, to conclude now, to what extent are these Grotian predicaments relevant today, these trade-offs? I think there are similar predicaments with us, if of course in contemporary clothes. Those familiar with the dilemma between peace and justice in transitional justice may have immediately recognized the kind of trade-offs that Grotius was talking about here. But for purposes of this conference, perhaps one valuable teaching, and that I'm going to put in scare quotes, that we could have from Grotius is to recover a sense of the fundamental value trade-offs, the predicaments that are constitutive of the project of international criminal law. And this may tie with Morten's sort of mapping of different legal goods, as basically I think this insight here is different goods may not be had at the same time. There are tensions, there are trade-offs between different goods. And Grotius, I think, was in effect arguing that the logic of state sovereignty and the imperative of international pacification were at odds, in tension, may have to exclude imperatives of criminal justice. So I have argued that Grotius faced a fundamental predicament between two ways of seeing war and punishment. On the one hand, there's the just war lens, in which one assumes that the justice of a casus belli can be established and that there is a universal duty to support the just side and to condemn and prosecute aggressors. On the other hand, there is this solemn war lens, in which one assumes that both sides in war may have plausible reasons to fight, or at least that's very hard to tell which one is right and which one is wrong, and that the justice of a war, in particular criminal justice vis-a-vis alleged aggressor, may be either indeterminate or have to be sacrificed for the sake of peace and deference to sovereign judgment. Now, it seems to me that this predicament is particularly acute today in the project of codifying the crime of aggression that may enter into, may become active next year, which is arguably described in this just war framework that I'm talking about. For a given war, ideally, it should be possible to establish which side is the aggressor. Maybe both sides are aggressor, that could happen. And aggressors should be punished so that progressively aggression ceases to happen. And I think Grotius would have opposed this aspiration of codifying aggression. He was very much involved in a similar enterprise in the rights of war and peace. But I think he would have been very cautious about the actual prospects of applying any definition to actual cases. He would have anticipated disagreements regarding the meaning of any definition and the facts of a case. And more importantly, I think he would have emphasized that states cannot and should not be forced to align behind any determination of aggression in particular cases, in particular a determination made by an international criminal court. I think he was much more of a pluralist than is usually recognized by Grotius scholars. So much has been written about the political entanglements of the International Criminal Court, very often in the spirit of regret, if not despair, the politics of the court. And I think Grotius would have been ambivalent about this regret. On the one hand, it would certainly be great if states could align behind a court's ruling. But on the other hand, it is very valuable, and it was for Grotius, important that states retain the freedom to decide whether or not to support the court. So Grotius may perhaps have argued that that choice about supporting or not the determination of an act of aggression cannot and should not be taken away from states. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening. For more open access audio recordings, films, and publications, go to silrap.org.